All right, we are here for the Gone Rogue podcast. We've got Abby and Liam from Evolving Love, which I'm super excited because I have been stalking them online for a long time. Greg discovered you guys. And what's something I really enjoy about following you guys online is that you write really well. And I just really enjoy hearing a vulnerable, open, but well thought out expression of who you are and what you believe in. And I really appreciate it. And you guys have got a really cool story as well. So I wanted to throw it just to help people figure out who you are and know a little bit more about you. We're just going to run through some. It's almost like, you know how people do rapid fire questions and they save it for the end of the podcast. I'm like, we'll start with that. We'll do that first. So Abby and Liam, how long have you guys been together?
We have been together for 12 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 12 years. How did you meet?
We met at university.
Yeah.
Here in Canberra.
Oh, really?
So I was playing a gig at the local food co-op at the university. I'm a musician as well, and Abby was in the audience, and it was love at first sight.
That sounds like an epic story. Just like eyes connecting over the crowd, the music just banging.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, it was actually really funny because I was standing on stage with my band and the whole audience was completely dark, but there was one broken light. And this is a true story. There was one broken light and it was for some reason pointing directly at Abby. So Abby was like this shining light of
That's
gorgeousness.
Awesome.
Yeah. And the result of that meant that Liam was basically singing to me because I was the only face in the audience that he could see. So I was really tuned in to him and was like, wow, you know, we're definitely having a connection.
Yeah, yeah, you're like, yeah. He is an excellent performer.
I know. He really is.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. So,
and that was all before, you know, online dating and things like that. Yeah. So that was in like 2012, the beginning of 2012. So, I mean, it was happening, but for us, you know, we did have a pretty, pretty sweet meet cute story.
That is very, very cute. You guys are married?
We are.
We are married.
When did you get married?
In 2015.
Yeah. Okay. So then when did you decide to go down the path of non-monogamy/polyamory?
Yeah. So we were kind of exploring the concepts and the ideas around non-monogamy pretty soon into our relationship, probably about a year into our relationship, we started to talk. We were always very interested in sharing about sexuality and going kind of deep on those kind of conversations, especially, you know, in those initial kind of NRE phase, we were basically talking about everything. And eventually the conversations turned to things like, oh, have you ever thought about doing this? Have you ever thought about maybe, you know, having an experience in a group situation or something like that? So I would say about a year into our relationship, we started to really just intellectualize and have chats about the possibility of maybe doing something non-monogamous. And not that we knew anything really about non-monogamy or any theoretical things, or we were kind of just playing with the ideas in fantasy for the first, I would say, year.
Mm. We were definitely having feelings of compersion without knowing anything about compersion or anything about this world. So just very instinct and intuitive led, I think. Yeah.
That's cool. So you guys started to talk about experimenting and doing things a little bit differently. How did marriage come about for you? I know that a lot of people that are, you know, potentially in an open or polyamorous or non-monogamous relationship, the idea of marriage, you know, and that's for people within the community and outside of the community, sometimes seems at odds. What was marriage to you guys? What does it mean for you?
I think marriage, for me, certainly, I won't speak for Abby, but for me, it was a sense of commitment. And it was a sense that I was committing to Abby as my partner. And it was a long-term commitment of love and not of fidelity. It was quite funny. In our marriage vows, we definitely weren't saying, oh, and we'll definitely never have sex with other people. We kind of skirted around the traditional vows, I think. But it was really, for me, it was a celebration of our love. And the wedding ceremony and the kind of the party that ensued, it was just a really beautiful way to kind of declare our love in front of family and friends and also just express that sense of a real commitment to each other.
Mm. We are hopeless romantics.
We are. And it does, but it does stand at odds a little bit with some of the narratives around, you know, like the best sort of non-monogamous relationship is one that's non-hierarchical, because of course, as soon as you start to bring the marriage into it, there is that sense of an implied kind of primary relationship, and that's I guess how we do navigate our non-monogamy as kind of primary partners to each other. But I think, you know, marriage, lots of people have said, well, why do you even bother getting married? Like, you're non-monogamous. Like, surely you should just, like, you know, hold hands and just, it works when it works. But I think there is a real beauty in still that commitment and that celebration of love.
Mm.
Yeah, I like to be traditional in that sense. And, you know, maybe not traditional in the practice of it, but the celebration and the ritual of it. I think there's something really magic that can happen there. And I know that people are potentially moving away from it. And I hope that we don't move too far, that we just challenge it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think, like you guys said, like, recognize the celebration and the cool things that you can do and the romance about it. I think there is a powerful story that can connect people with that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When did you have kids?
So we have one child and we had him in 2018. So he's 5. We were living overseas at the time. And yeah, it's been a really interesting journey of, you know, already coming from a place of non-monogamy. We were non-monogamous before we were married. We were non-monogamous before we were parents. And, you know, the shifts and changes that come with parenting and non-monogamy has definitely been a very interesting journey.
Mm. How do you mind? How old are you guys?
I'm 35.
I always forget my age. I feel like I'm constantly 24 years old, but apparently I'm not. I was born in 1990, so I am 33.
You are 33.
Yeah.
Yep. You're nice. 34 you guys, this year. You guys have done a lot. Like, it feels like you have accomplished a lot in your relationship, and in two ways: in the way that you've, you know, changed the narrative, as well as you've done a lot together as a unit, which is really cool. I'm the same. I think it is ironic that, you know, people kind of view non-hierarchical polyamory as the best. I'm like, is that a hierarchy? I don't know. But there definitely is a challenge around, like, you know, having someone that is your person, and what does that mean? And is it disrespectful? Does it mean that you think less of other people? But I feel a super strong connection with Greg in a way that it feels very much at times like a monogamous relationship, but it just simply doesn't have the same boundaries. Do you guys, like, what are the non-negotiables for your relationship?
Ooh, the non-negotiables.
That's a great question.
Yeah. Well, I will say that we're very similar to you in that way, and we are deeply pair bonded with each other. And it's really interesting. It's like, make, you know, being that pair bonded couple, we are a married couple, we are parents together. We have such a collaboration in life and love and parenting, you know, and then making space for new partners as well. And I would say for Liam and I, we do tend to, with new partners, it's very sort of person specific, and we sort of live somewhere in between, you know, monogamish sometimes and then more polyamorous depending on the connection. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we don't really have set rules or
I think there's a sense of fluidity within how we approach non-monogamy. So there's been times, certainly when we first started on our non-monogamous journey, in reality we definitely have had rules in place, you know, certain things that we wanted to respect as boundaries for each other. And we still have those definitely to a certain degree. I would say now the non-negotiables for us look more like, you know, our son always comes first. So we'd never, you know, engage in anything that, you know, took us away from family in a way that was kind of negative to that. I would say also the fact that we always value and respect each other in anything that we do. There is always honesty. That is a huge non-negotiable for us. And it's also a really freeing thing, because, you know, we feel like there's nothing to hide, even if they're tricky conversations. So the non-negotiables for us aren't necessarily like, you can't do this specific thing with a partner. Because as Abby said, you know, everything is, you know, it's very specific to a particular relationship, or even where we are within, you know, our current, you know, our relationship as well.
Mm. And I think early on in our relationship, we did hold on to things a little more tightly. We didn't date separately. You know, initially those early days, I wasn't, I didn't feel overly comfortable if you had a one-on-one line of communication, you know, with another woman. But over the years, so much of that has changed and shifted. The compersion looks different, and it's just sort of naturally unfolded in a way that works for us. But we're still very tuned in with each other. And yeah, as Liam said, prioritizing our family unit and making sure that everything is really strong at home is definitely the foundation for where we can move with our non-monogamy.
Yeah, I think the funny thing that I've experienced is you assume that once you've gotten to a certain point or there's a certain dynamic that it will just continue and it will continue to work and you'll be totally cool with it. But I've been through these just interesting waves of phases where I'm like, let's do everything and anything goes almost. And it's just like, let's just be wild. And then there are other phases where I'm like, I basically want to hibernate and I have zero tolerance for anything. And it's just a really interesting experience where, you know, the trap of rules, right? Where you talk to so many couples that started with so many rules and then they're like, we had to get rid of them. We had to renegotiate so much. And it's like, it's like a rule makes sense for one particular scenario at one point in time. And then the next time it happens, it's like, it could be, you know, 12 months down the track or a different person, or you're in a different point in your relationship. And it's like, that rule makes zero sense. It doesn't work. It's just, it's such a funny thing to experience the way that it has to be, like you said, it has to be fluid. And I think that if you aren't open to, or it's almost like if you can't adapt, if you can't have an ongoing conversation, I think that's where people run into a lot of tricky stickiness or resistance. What's the actual dynamic that you guys have right now? Like if you guys got partners or just casual or ongoing people that you're dating, what does it look like right now?
Yeah, so I've gone on a few dates recently. I don't have a kind of a constant partner. I have a few, I would say, comet partners. So people that I've had.
I love that phrase. I don't know why.
Yes, yeah.
Can you just explain what a comet partner is if people don't know what that is?
Yeah, so a comet partner is essentially a partner that you might not see kind of regularly, but they kind of come in and out of your life almost like a comet, like a shooting star of connection. And I'm very lucky that I do have a few of those, which is great. And sometimes it's a geographical distance that means that it can't be more of a regular thing, or perhaps someone is like super busy with work or overseas for their work and that type of thing. I'm seeing a few people kind of, you know, intermittently, I would say.
And I would say that at the moment I'm similar. I don't have a set like regular other partner at the moment. I do have people who I'm in connection with. It's really interesting. I tend to, when I meet someone and we have a connection, it tends to be quite a ongoing, like there's not really an end date for me, even if we don't see each other that often. When we first moved back to Australia after living in New York, we weren't out as being non-monogamous. So I actually didn't feel comfortable dating in Canberra where we live because it's a very small place. So I did date in Sydney. So it's really interesting. I do have some connections still with people who are in Sydney. And sometimes it's like, you know, life happens, they have other relationships or they need to, you know, be monogamous for a while with somebody else, but I feel really fortunate in the sense that there's that sort of understanding and that movement that, you know, when the connection is right and when things are in alignment, we can connect. And when we're not in that space, we're able to sort of move into more of a friendship place as well. But we do have, we also have a lot of non-monogamous friends. So people who we are, I would say, in non-monogamous energy with here in Canberra as well, but we also have friendships with them too. So we're sort of in that space where we can kind of dip into the friendship, but then also there is that underlying flirtation. You know, we do get together sometimes when it works, when schedules allow. And I think that's sort of where we're both at the moment. But like you, Kate, you know, we do have periods of just hibernating as well. I think me in particular, sometimes I just need to have a little bit of downtime or just if things are happening in our life. You know, the connection might all be infinite, but, you know, time and bandwidth and life and work commitments and family commitments or whether you're unwell, you know, all of that needs to kind of be in place for me to then feel open to go and date and forge new connections.
Mm. How much do you, and I know, you know, the interesting thing that I've experienced is having not necessarily standards, but creating, you know, you have multiple relationships with people, whether that it's a one evening thing or if it is an ongoing thing. How much do you need to have all of those connections also be conscious in this, you know, maybe not to the same degree that you guys are, but how much do you feel like you need to be with other non-monogamous people or other people that are just on the same wavelengths as you? And I know that, you know, it can be hard to meet those people. So sometimes that's what controls it. It's dictated by who you get to connect with. But do you pursue specifically those connections, or in those relationships, are you trying to create that? Like, how much do you bring in some of those practices that you guys enjoy together to your other connections?
Well, it's really interesting because we run the Evolving Love Project and we have these conversation evenings. Often we're around a lot of non-monogamous people, so we've almost Handy. Kind of built a, yeah. So we've kind of built an inbuilt community in Canberra now in Sydney that is kind of consists of so many non-monogamous people. So we're often in that energy, and I naturally gravitate towards people who have a real sense of aliveness within their character, and have a real sense of creativity in the way that they live their life. And I find that often non-monogamous people really have that sense of aliveness and that real spark within them, and I naturally gravitate towards them. So, you know, when we first started exploring in non-monogamy, we were in situations where it was more of a fleeting connection, in the sense that we would go to, you know, parties and, you know, and have these really fun experiences. But often we'd find ourselves going to the parties, having these really hot, you know, hot times. But then, like ships in the night, you know, we'd never see them again. And it was kind of a shame, because we'd have a great connection. So we started gravitating. This is when we were in New York when we first started doing this. We started gravitating towards communities of non-monogamous people that we could also kind of cultivate this sense of friendship with them, and not just this sense of kind of like that traditional, for want of a better term, swinger kind of mentality that was just very physically based. So I definitely gravitate towards that kind of connection.
And I think for me personally as well, I'm not super interested in dating a monogamous person, because ultimately they're probably looking for, you know, another form of connection. They might be looking for their one person to settle down and be monogamous with. So that's sort of in my mind as well. I know that, you know, at a certain point our time might sort of end, and then our connection or communication might actually need to completely stop. So when I date non-monogamous people, for me, it's fine if things pause and change, or, you know, the intimacy aspect has to, you know, come to an end for a while, or, you know, you never know how things will unfold, but there's still that openness to like the friendship and the connection, as where I think if I'm dating a monogamous person, you know, the door might get closed on me once they do find their person. So I, like Liam, you know, I do like to be in those non-monogamous communities where there's just a little bit more fluidness and open-mindedness to the understanding of the weaving of these relationships.
Yeah, I think it's so enjoyable to just, it's hard to not be attracted to people that you're just on the same wavelength with, right? So with dating people and with the way that you guys practice being conscious in your relationship, what are the things that you get frustrated with? Like, what are the things that, and you know, it might be some of the dating stuff with trying to connect with the right kind of people, or other people not communicating very well, or just issues that you run into with time. Like, you know, what are the things that you find actually, you know, I would love to just spend an entire hour talking about like the pros of non-monogamy, but I think it's actually, there are always some interesting frustrations or things that you can struggle with. And I would love to, you know, and jealousy might be one of them. I think that's probably something that people would immediately have come to mind, or like the risk of losing someone. But sometimes it is just like the day-to-day things of like trying to organize meeting people, or finding the time, or losing a connection that you were excited about. Like for me, my biggest frustration is dating and filtering through people. I do a lot of it online, so I tend to find that extremely exhausting at times. But it's like, it's the same thing as, you know, when you're single, it's the same kind of world that you're living in sometimes. Tell me about what you guys get frustrated with.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that frustrates probably both of us collectively is like any sense of a lack of understanding of the importance of like family or anything like that. So, and kind of respect for someone's schedule. I think, you know, often we have to kind of put dates on the calendar kind of a little bit far in advance. And so if someone is flaking at like, you know, 1 hour before, you know, so the time has been put aside, and maybe if we're both going out to meet something
immediately.
I mean, yeah. And it's really difficult. And I not to hang this on people without, who don't necessarily have families, but often that happens kind of more so with people who don't have kids themselves and don't understand like the sheer logistics involved in all of us coordinating a time, then getting a babysitter, you know, doing all this kind of stuff. I find often when people have kids, they have a little bit of a sense of like, okay, if we're going to cancel, and, you know, of course things come up and, you know, there's acts of God and, you know, whatever it might be. And we are understanding, but I think that is definitely a frustration. Anytime where it's been like, we're like driving to a date and then we get the text message, oh, you know, I've suddenly come down with a slight sniffle, you know, it's like, really? Like, you know, this has been like a serious operation. We've had like an Excel spreadsheet for this whole date, you know? So I would say that is something I think that frustrates both of us a little bit.
Mm.
Yeah. And it doesn't happen a lot, but when it does happen, it's just like, really? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about frustrations. I'm not sure if I feel overly sort of frustrated about things, but I mean, it's just a fascinating process to actually step out into the world and to be, you know, dating and being online and going for coffees with people and trying to find that sense of, you know, if there's a compatibility, if there's a connection. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's definitely a journey. I would say probably one of the things that has come up for me in the past has been around, you know, finding that balance as to where I'm emotionally sort of sitting with somebody else and also what they can expect from me and what, you know, I would expect from them, but also how that can change as the connection goes along. I've had some situations in the past where I've dated people and they felt, you know, really at first, you know, they're so excited, you know, that I'm non-monogamous and they connect in really well with Liam, and that's been fantastic. And you know, we're all sort of on the same page, but then the reality is that, you know, I am a non-monogamous woman, which means that I'm also open to other connections also beyond them as well. So things can come up in that space. You know, there can be jealousy in unexpected areas where, you know, partners haven't necessarily been jealous with Liam, but then, you know, can feel uncomfortable that, you know, I am in an open relationship, and that means that I will be forming new connections, whether they're new friendships or at some point new intimate partners. So that's something that's come up for us.
And then of course there's also the standard kind of like dating app frustrations. And because we are in Canberra, you know, we were very lucky to live in New York for 6 years. And obviously
a little bit different in New York.
Yeah. Dating in New York looks a little bit different, and there is kind of an endless stream of awesome people. And there's awesome people, of course, in Canberra, and there's awesome people everywhere. But just by virtue of the fact that it is a smaller place, I think, you know, there is some frustration. And sometimes like the web of non-monogamous activity can kind of coalesce in a way that everyone's dating everyone. And it's like, oh wow, this is like really getting kind of pretty intricate, like figuring out like, oh, that person's dated that person, and for some reason it didn't end up too good with them, so we can't date them. But then, you know, it becomes this kind of like Shakespearean, you know, play that like unfolds in front of our eyes. And I think there is a little bit of frustration kind of that's involved in that.
We are in an interesting situation with the conversation evenings, actually, because we want to create that space for people to come and talk about everything that will come up with non-monogamy or what they're going through, but are also aware of the fact that we want everybody to still find community in that space too. And for us personally, dating within the Evolving Love Project sort of conversation night community isn't really something that we lean into, actually. Mm-hmm. We do like to have a bit of that distance as well, and also for our own privacy as well.
But then the problem comes is that pretty much everyone in Canberra has come to a conversation night, I feel like, in the non-monogamous scene. So it is a tricky thing. And And one thing, sorry to take your question, Kate, and run with it, but another, maybe there's just so many frustrating things.
We've gone rogue.
We have gone rogue. But one thing that Abby finds really interesting is that because we have a podcast and because we share so openly, Abby has been on dates where she knows that this person has like deep dived every single episode. Yeah. And they're kind of talking like they're already, you know, long-term lovers with Abby and they know everything about our relationship. And in some ways they actually kind of do. But then there is this kind of this asymmetry of information and knowledge in, you know, like, because people have read all of Abby's amazing writing or they've listened to the podcast, suddenly they're coming to a date with like just way too much information, you know?
Yeah,
it's a funny position to be in.
Yeah, and you, I'm sure, Kate, you would understand that as well, you know, with your, you know, this might be something that you are also very familiar with.
Yeah, it's funny people coming in with like they know about you and don't make that clear, and it's always a weird you're playing a little like game of like do they listen to the podcast, do they follow me or don't they, this is, I don't know. Okay, so I know that jealousy is a topic that can kind of get overdone, but you guys have been doing this for a long time now. What has your journey been with it? And I know you mentioned that there was this unrecognized compersion at the beginning. Has there been also jealousy that might have been recognized or unrecognized or insecurities? Like, what has that journey been like for you guys through, you know, the different phases of your relationship?
The jealousy and the envy has definitely been a part of the entire experience, you know, and I think it's something that we might not ever fully get over. It's just something that we do sort of learn to work through, but it is very interesting how jealousy can come up. You know, for me, I haven't really had too much sexual jealousy with Liam and with other women. I tend to get more jealous when it's, you know, more of an emotional bond is coming in. That's when my little alarms come up, or if there's going to be a bit more one-on-one time, or if connections are, you know, heading in a more sort of intimate space where it's, yeah, not necessarily sexual, but maybe, you know, spending more time together, going for walks and just things that couples or lovers tend to do and is a very normal aspect of relating and getting to know somebody. You know, I still have those feelings come up for me. Yeah, it's really interesting, but it's definitely changed over the years. Over the years, I've become so much more comfortable with things and, you know, talk to Liam about it. And he knows me so well, and he knows if a situation's going to be, you know, firing off my little jealousy alarms, and we do just, you know, talk it out and try and work through what's coming up. But yeah, it's really fascinating, especially it still surprises me because there are some times when, you know, I'll be so encouraging of what's happening. I remember the first time a long time ago when Liam first went on his first solo date. We were living in New York, and yes, we'd been non-monogamous for years and I was dating separately, but this was his first time of dating separately. And, you know, he was going on a date with somebody who was a partner of one of my other partners. So we're very like, everything's great, everyone's vouched for, and we're feeling wonderful about it. And I remember helping you, you know, support you in what you were going to wear. You were like, what am I going to wear? What am I going to do? And, you know, all this stuff. And I was like on the journey, and it was really exciting.
And I was so nervous.
You were so nervous because you hadn't been on a first date since we got together. So it was really exciting to support you through that. And I wanted it to go so well. And I was just so in your corner. And then I remember it got to that point in the date. I think you sent me a message from the bathroom when you're in the bar, like, having a great time, she's awesome, love you, something or other, you know, we're going to go back to hers. And then, you know, I didn't hear from you. You know, the phone, the messages stop, you know, coming. And then it's like, oh, I'm in the space of the unknown now. I don't know what's happening. I don't know where you are, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, what does her apartment look like? Oh, I bet maybe it's cooler than our apartment, or, you know, this, that, and the other. And all these things are coming up for me. And I just couldn't imagine where you are. And I immediately sort of felt disconnected from the experience because you were having your own experience. And that was what we had wanted and cultivated and jointly organized. And, you know, it was happening. And then I just remember all of those feelings were coming up, you know, and of course you came home and you're excited to share with me, but I was a bit, you know, it was very late in the evening at stage.
It was like 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning, because it was, she was also up in Harlem and we were in Brooklyn. So I had this like 90 minute subway ride to, first of all, get nervous before the date, but then afterwards to know that I hadn't messaged Abby back like immediately. And because obviously, you know, the date was going quite well. And then, but then I had 90 minutes on the train on the way home to try and stay awake after, you know, it was a whole thing. So
it was a whole thing. Yeah. But that was also a learning experience for us, because the next day Liam had to go away for work really early and he was away for a few nights. And I was at home at that stage with our baby. So, you know, we didn't really have that time to sort of reconnect and hold hands and go for a walk around the park or go for breakfast and just sort of slip into us again. It was sort of like the date happened, then it was very late in the evening, then you were gone in the morning, you know. So it was a bit of a cocktail of like, sort of confusion and lots of different emotions, but also feeling compersion, but you know, all of those other feelings along with the compersion. So it was a journey.
Yeah, and I think it is a constant journey to kind of navigate jealousy and these types of things that we, as Abby said, it kind of never, it's not like you conquer jealousy and then suddenly you're just victorious over the enemy. But it is something that with time and with communication, you can kind of preempt it as well. Like, I think we're like, I'm quite good at knowing what would trigger Abby and her jealousy, because we've worked through situations where that's come up, and just being mindful of how that kind of manifests within Abby is really important as well.
What stuff do you guys do? Like, what are your management or jealousy tools?
Well, one of mine is an incredible app called Clue. And I've mentioned this in the podcast. I've mentioned this in the podcast way too many times. So, I mean, it's like, but it is, I tell every man I know to get it, because it's incredible. But essentially it tracks the cycle and hormones and all this type of thing. But for us and our relationship, just personally, a lot of these types of issues around jealousy can happen more in a more exacerbated fashion at certain times of the month. I've got to be careful how I phrase this, but you know, at certain times of the month. So you know, there's things like more specifically, like I wouldn't arrange to have a date, for example, you know, in the window of you know, in the eye of the storm.
Yeah, I think on Clue it's got the storm clouds.
Yes, it's got the storm clouds, and it allows you to track every day. If you want to, you can put in the emotions that your partner is feeling. So it's like depressed or angry or sad. So you know, when it becomes important, I start to, you know, track these things, and then it can kind of predict. And it is remarkably, of course, like, you know, Abby has a very regular kind of hormonal cycle. And so in some ways that's a real gift, because it allows me to very accurately predict, you know, where things are going, you know, and the different trigger points. So it's like, I wouldn't organize a date, you know, I wouldn't, you know, do something overtly romantic, you know, I wouldn't hire a sailboat and like pack a picnic and, you know, go out onto Lake Burley Griffin and do something like really extravagant, you know, right in that time. So I think, yeah, I think that is from my end, you know, the key thing that I do to kind of manage.
And also just learning how my compersion shows up within that time. You know, I think as women, you know, tracking our cycles can be so helpful for so many aspects of life. But I find specifically for non-monogamy as well, because it shocks me every month, but every month when I'm premenstrual, the compersion has completely gone out the window. I'm feeling very monogamous. I get overwhelmed by things. You know, even just the thought of non-monogamy seems like this outlandish thing. And then I move through it. You know, I come out the other side and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go. I'm feeling compersive. What's happening for you, Liam? What's going on? You're on the...
Are you seeing anyone?
You're going on a date? Are you going to catch up with that girl who you saw, you know, last month? Like, what's going on? You know, and then it's sort of like this gradual, like, compersion disintegration as the storm clouds come. So that can also be a little bit tricky, because when you're in a situation where you're connecting with multiple people and they also have their own storm clouds and their own lives and their own things happening, it's like not everyone can be managing their life to my hormone cycle. That's just not realistic. Like Liam can, to the best of his ability. But something that I found in the past has been really helpful, especially when you've been seeing someone for quite a long period of time a while back. You know, I was able to communicate this with her and she was really cool. And, she was so grateful that I could chat. And I was like, you know, when I'm just premenstrual, I'm just not feeling it. And she was like, oh, I really totally respect that. You can just let me know and there's never any pressure. And, you know, she was very solo poly and doing her own thing and was just very fluid.
But also after a while, her cycle synced up with Abby's.
We synced up.
Which is
so there's
which is
one
incredible.
Week every month that you're out of a date.
Yeah, I'm very quiet during that week.
That is so great. Yeah, it's so funny. I love the connections that you can have with meeting other people that, you know, like the people that Greg has seen. It's always terrified me, but it's always been positive. And even if I've been scared or feeling insecure or feeling intimidating, there's something that happens when you get to just talk to that person. And I think one part of it is you realize they're just a human being and they're just a normal person. And then the other part is you confront that monster in the closet, you know, the monster under the bed. It's like when you face it, you realize that it was much scarier in imagination than it is in reality. And I love having those moments. And that is often the thing that can break me out of feeling really scared or insecure or really shitty and whatever's going on in my head, just talking to the person that I'm getting in my head about, you know, ironically. And the cycle
and
thing
is
so funny.
I was just going to social media is a huge problem with this, because what we do is we see, like, if one of Greg's partners were to look at your social media, like, you have all these amazing photos, it's like you being an athlete and like you being like this, you know, incredible physical adventurer, and it's like they have this kind of image in their mind, they start to build this construct of who you are or who Abby is or who I am, and it's all based from social media. But because we don't have the context of like a human conversation, we're suddenly left with like our brains, you know, imagination, just to kind of like expand this alternate universe of this person's life.
Yeah, it's so funny. I feel like, you know, if you were living 20 years ago and having to do this polyamory, non-monogamous, open relationship practice, it would potentially be different. It would bring up, I mean, it would still bring up many things, but just different things. I think having to do face-to-face is just a whole different experience. I think, you know, the problem with having dating apps and social media apps is it is about the outside presentation of someone. And so you can't help but use that to go off. And it's like, it gives you no real insight. You don't really understand who they are, what the connection's like. And I think, you know, Abby, you were talking about, I'm wondering about what her apartment's like. I've wondered about people that Greg's seen and been like, is she really smart? Is she making a whole lot more money? Is she way more successful than me? Like, what's going on? And you don't have any idea, and your brain will just go there. Like, your brain will go there, and it's just going to test things out and see if it triggers something. And of course it will. But yeah, it's such a funny thing to be able to break through that and actually just talk to the person. That totally changes how I can feel in that scenario. Before we move on, I want to ask you guys about how things look pre and post kids. But the cycle thing, 100% of the time, if I get upset or I'm more sensitive, guarantee it's the week before my period every time. And it's like, I can even track, I'm a big journaler. I'm a documenter. I love writing things down. I love, I love social media for that reason. I document. And I can go back through my journal and I'm like, oh, this big thing happened. Or like, I was really struggling. And I'll be like, it was the week before my period. I'll go back like another year. I'll track it. I'm like, week before my period every damn time. And it's just, you become so sensitive and little things feel so big. And I get really in my head. And it's just like, I'm the same. But then the week before I ovulate, I'm like talking to everybody. I'm like super pumped to make connections. I'm like, I want to go on these dates. And so I sometimes initiate dating conversations in that window. And then they start to come to fruition right before my period. I'm like, I really don't want to anymore. So can we postpone, or like, can we, and it's like, how, why?
Oh my gosh.
My God. Why?
Oh my goodness, Kate, I'm feeling so seen right now. This happens to me all the time leading into the ovulation. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to date. What's happening? Let's organize it. I'll get a, you know, few new connections happening. And then, yeah, the same thing. It comes and I'm like, oh, I'm tired. And I'm
Well, that's why I'm gently trying to encourage Abby to start reaching out to people. Like if she can start that process, like as the PMS trails off, then we're in the sweet mm-hmm. spot. You know, because then
yeah, you
can
need
actually
to reverse it. Well,
exactly.
Yeah, Liam is always in this situation where he's like, "I know you're not feeling it now, but you know, in a week and a half, you're going to be feeling
you.
Pretty good." And I'm like,
"You're going to wish.
Okay.
You're going to wish you did do it."
Yeah,
yeah. I connected as well. Like, and I think it makes sense. Your desire to just be social, but my sex drive, if you want to use like Emily Nagoski, author of what's her book, Come As You Are.
She's
got a new one as well. She's got a new one, which I haven't read, but it'd be amazing, I'm sure. I was like, oh, I think I have a spontaneous sex drive around ovulation. And then I'm only responsive in the week before my period. And so it's like, even connecting that, I'm like, I can so not be in the mood the week before my cycle. But if Greg can, you know, like start to put lay down the moves and like, you know, whatever the connections that he likes to make in those moments. And he's a very he is romantic. And I love that. I could be like, really, what am I going to tell him? What am I going to say? How am I going to get out of this? And then like, you know, 5 minutes later, I'm like, this was the best decision ever. Mm. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, it is amazing to observe what our brains and bodies do. Do you guys have anything to add to that before we move on?
No, I just think it's great to be able to have these conversations with your partner and to really destigmatize having the conversations, because some guys that I know feel awkward even having this conversation, partly because in past relationships often they've it's felt like a weaponized thing to talk about periods and cycles and all this kind of thing, or perhaps that they've brought it up in a way that's like, oh, you're frustrated at me, you must be on your period, like all those tropes of like bad communication from guys who are like using kind of periods as an excuse or kind of as an accusation of bad behavior. But once we move past that and we can actually just acknowledge like cycles are a thing, like let's talk about it, let's all live more harmoniously just by actually just communicating about the importance of navigating these things, I think that's going to ultimately result in much more healthy relationships and much healthier communication.
Hair, hair. Nice. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
Well said, Liam.
There you go.
Nailed it. All right. Tell me about the experience. Okay, actually, I'm gonna kick off the Substack that I read that was about you guys closing up. And I would love to know the details of what you guys did. Greg and I are planning on starting a family this year. So I mm-hmm. totally want to know every single little thing that you did. But what was the, you know, the process of being open to potentially closing for a period of time and then reopening? The article that I read that I loved was, I think, Liam reminding you of, you know, the things that you had done in the past and it becoming a part of your dirty talk and it becoming invited back into the bedroom just with you two. And then it was this like, oh, that's right, I have this other identity, not just the mother and partner identity. And it was this nice moment of like, oh, I can do that. I can be that person still, and inviting yourself back out into that world. And I enjoyed reading that and the journey that you kind of took the readers on, just because I have been feeling and struggling with figuring out how to potentially close, but then I don't want to be in a position where Greg wants to be open and he's forced to be closed, but I also don't want to feel insecure or unsafe or, you know, have any unnecessary stress. Like, it's such a funny position to be in because my brain is like, just both do whatever you want, do what feels right for you and be open and, you know, you trust each other and that's great and you have great communication, so just do that thing. But then there's so many parts, and I said I feel like hibernating at times and I want to kind of nest at the moment. So I'm like, I sat down with Greg actually just this morning and said, hey, I'm not interested in dating. I have zero desire. Like, I just absolutely am in this mentally. I just don't even think about it. It doesn't even occur to me. So I've realized I'm not interested in dating. However, I want you to know that you have, you know, my blessing to do what you want to do. And then let's revisit when we are at the next point in my cycle where we're trying to have kids again. Because there's obviously periods in between ovulating that you're not going to get pregnant. So I'm like, let's just keep doing what we're doing. I'm going to hit pause for now. And then let's revisit when we're actually at that point of, you know, I'm in a fertile window. And so we're actively trying. It's been a funny thing to deal with. How did you guys do it? What was that process like for you?
Well, first of all, I want to say, I think that you have such a beautiful approach to that, where you're just going with how you're feeling. You're not trying to put any expectation or pressure on yourself to be open, you know, especially when you're in this space where you're having conversations about non-monogamy. You know, it's very similar to me, you know, in the sense that we have this podcast and writing, and you're in that non-monogamous space. And something that I'm aware of is, like, just because I do talk about this doesn't mean that I always need to be dating. I don't always have to be doing that. The most important thing is, you know, if I'm feeling that way inclined, I can go and do that. I don't always want to. So I really connect with what you just said. For Liam and I, with the pregnancy, you know, you never know what's going to come up for you with a pregnancy. You don't really know how you're going to be feeling. And so understanding that it is also, it's a beautiful chapter. And just Liam and I really approached it with, we're just going to let it unfold and see, you know, how it goes for us. But then quite soon into becoming pregnant, you know, I did go into that nesting. You know, I didn't really feel like going and dating other people or doing anything like that, because I sort of slipped into another world a little bit. You know, I'm thinking about birth preparation, and I'm reading about that. I'm listening to podcasts about birth. I'm getting into that space. So I just wanted to have the clear path to do that. And Liam has always been very supportive of, you know, supporting me with that journey as well. And you weren't dating separately at that time. But it was very interesting, Kate, because I still had lots of hormones happening, you know, as I was pregnant. So I did still have so many compulsive feelings that were coming up for me. And it was very interesting, actually. I did have a lot of compulsive feelings in the first and the second trimester. And then, you know, when I came into the third trimester, you know, it was summer in New York. I was very big. You know, I had the swollen ankles. I'm just, you know, quite tired, you know, in that phase. But it always felt for Liam and I like this isn't going to be forever. It's like, this is just a beautiful time of pregnancy and birth and postpartum, which, you know, at that point we didn't know how that would all look. So just being gentle on ourselves and not putting any pressure or expectation, but actually leaning then more into, you know, when we did have the time, the fantasy or talking about non-monogamy. And, you know, Liam has always been such a support of, you know, whenever you feel ready to get back out there, I support you. You know, if you feel like you do want to date again at some point, I'm there for you for that. And then, you know, when beautiful baby comes, you know, you're just in that newborn world. It's so intensely consuming and powerful and very tiring. You're very sleep deprived, all of those things that happen. So, you know, I didn't sort of rush to go out and start dating too soon after, but we did start to, get back into that messaging space, actually sending each other messages, because you can feel a little bit overtouched when you're a new mum, you know, if you're like breastfeeding, or if you're, you know, you're going to be with the baby a lot. So, you know, when you do have a bit of time to yourself, you're sort of thinking, okay, I just need to shower. I just need to eat. You know, maybe I'm going to reply to an email, you know, and then, you know, you're needed with the baby again. So we didn't really, dating with a very young newborn wasn't really a thing for us, but we were really lucky in that we have, you know, beautiful non-monogamous friends and community who were checking in with us, but we definitely lent into the friendship aspect, I would say, more of being, you know, non-monogamous, you know, with our non-monogamous community.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And did it change feelings of, sorry, keep going. I wanted to know if it changed your experience with compersion or jealousy, if you had more or less of one or the other.
Look, I wouldn't say that it necessarily like overall changed it. It just was, you know, my energy was just going more towards my baby. You know, that was sort of where my energy and my focus was going. But as he got older, and as, you know, Liam is able to, you know, take him out for walks, and, you know, I'm able to just have those little moments of time to myself again, you know, all of those feelings did start to come back. It's like you do sort of, you know, you're always tuned into your child, but it's not that sort of that intense tunnel vision that you have with a very new newborn. So I did go on a date when our child was 5 months old, and it was with a previous partner who I'd been with. He was actually the first man who I'd been with within my marriage separately to Liam. And that was a really wonderful experience. And Liam just supported me so much through that, in the sense that we organized the timing so that I could feed our baby. You know, Liam was then able to put him in the front pack, take him out for a walk. I was able to go down to the bar that was just around the corner, have a beautiful date, reconnect with his partner. And it was actually wonderful. It was a beautiful reminder of, you know, being in my own body and being a person of desire, especially when you're, you know, your mum life. It's a very beautiful but also unglamorous experience. And it was really lovely for a few hours of time to connect in with someone who hadn't seen the sort of full breadth of everything that I'd been through that day, as far as, you know, having my hair in the bun or, you know, breastfeeding on the couch for like 6 hours straight. You know, it was really lovely to be able to step into that other part of myself for a few hours. And I was so fortunate to have such a beautiful, compersive husband with Liam, who was really encouraging of that. So I don't think it would have been possible without that kind of support.
Liam, has your, like, I want to ask you the same question. Has that changed for you being a dad? And I know that obviously the dynamics of it and the challenges are different, but has it been, and, you know, I think what I actually like, Abby, is the experience of realizing how much having that agency and autonomy becomes, you know, almost potentially more important if you've got children. It's like maybe the benefit of non-monogamy is it does force you to go back into that outsider person or out, you know, that other part of you. Have you had any experiences like that, Liam? Like, what is dad life like for you and non-monogamy?
Yeah, I would say that it is just a constant reminder of just nurturing the self, you know, and giving yourself a chance, a little escapism, I would say. For me, I really value that. And it doesn't have to be all the time. It's not like I'm constantly looking to escape family life or looking to escape, but just kind of that suspension of disbelief, like going on a date, like feeling those kind of nervous feelings. I went on a date just recently and I was sitting in the car before going in, you know, and you know, we dropped our son at school, and I was, you know, sitting in the car feeling a little bit nervous. And I was thinking, this is a crazy feeling, but I just really enjoyed and appreciated the fact that I could feel that sense of like nervousness. And then of course, conversely to that, after the date, I felt amazing. I was like, wow, that was so fun. You know, I was texting Abby all about it. I was like, oh, I had such a great time. And to think that I can, even though I am a father, and even though I care so deeply about being a great father and, you know, being there for our son and doing all these fun things, to kind of have that moment of really being able to nurture, you know, myself and have this kind of like novelty and this sense of aliveness. I think that in many ways that has actually helped me to be a better father and to be a better partner as well. And people might not necessarily need something like non-monogamy to feel like that. It might just be, you know, they love archery and going and shooting some arrows, you know, every weekend. Like that's great. But for me, one of the things among many things that I love to do is to kind of have those connections and make those really beautiful connections with Abby often as well. You know, when we meet other partners together or kind of that sense of separateness when I do go on a date by myself. Yeah, I just really enjoy it. So I think it does, I don't think it has a direct link to my experience as a father, but I think it has a direct link to my experience of life and how it just really kind of fulfills a part of me that I really love to nurture.
Yeah, I think the conversation Greg and I have constantly with people is when they ask about non-monogamy and like, you know, why you do it and the surprises or the challenges, we always say how taken aback we were about how much it feeds our relationship and feeds our connection. And it's like, you know, I guess it is a little bit of like you can't pour from an empty cup. And if you are in a relationship that doesn't have interdependence, it's very codependent and you do everything together and you don't have separateness, like there's something that, you know, as humans, like we just need that separateness. And I think it brings us back to life, and that can only serve the relationship when it's done healthily. So I love that. I love that. And I think that that's really cool. I'm looking for my notes. I saw Andrew Huberman on the weekend in Melbourne.
Oh,
and
amazing.
He was telling me, well, not telling me, telling us, telling me if specifically. Only. If only. He said there were two things. He was talking to it was either another neuroscientist or some expert on like studying humans. And he was like, there are two things that children need and two things that relationships need. And he's like, I've studied this for my entire life. This is what my career's work has amounted to. And for children, it's boundaries and safety, which I'd argue a lot of adults need that. But for relationships, the two things that were required for successful relationships was one, agency, and two, self-care. And I was like, oh my God, those two things to me would never occur to me with being in relationship with someone. I'm like, those are the things that an individual needs, but in a relationship, you almost potentially need that more, right? I love that. Mm-hmm. Because I know that, you know, you guys obviously value that stuff from your practice of non-monogamy. And I just, it's such a funny thing.
Good on you, Andrew Huberman. I have such a crush on him.
Right.
I think you and everyone else in the world.
Yep.
But he does talk about his relationships though, and he is a fascinating character in the way that he acknowledges his kind of failings within interpersonal relationships. I don't know how deep you are into all of his work.
Not that deep. I had to Google if he had a wife or if he had a partner, and I couldn't get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, so I think he's got a partner. I think she's quite controversial because there was some you know, there was some really interesting, some interesting things that were happening around it. But he's got fascinating insights. And I think that insight is really interesting because it kind of returns back to that question of, you know, the relationship one has to oneself. And it's like, can you love anyone else if you don't love yourself? You know, that classic thing.
Yeah, cliche, but it's like you just see that repeated in some, really good choices of words. But okay, I'm going to let you guys go in one moment. But this is from Greg, and I want to make sure I got one of his questions in. But he wanted to know from each of you, what is one thing you're currently working on? You know, what is the current evolution or what is the current challenge? What are you guys trying to do either for yourselves to, you know, benefit the relationship or specifically together to benefit the relationship? What are you currently working on?
Ooh, that is such a good question. I would say that I'm currently working on, staying open to new connections. I tend to sometimes, if things don't sort of work out that well for me or if a connection ends, I can tend to sort of be like, get in a little bit of a huff about it and think like, oh, you know, this, what am I doing this for? Or something like that. That can sometimes come up for me. And so what I'm working on is just staying really open. I don't always need to be seeking, like I don't need to be out there seeking a connection or looking for a new partner, but just staying really open to the possibility that, there are these beautiful connections out there. And I think also that can come down to, you know, with us being in Canberra as well and it being a bit of a small place. Staying open to connections and also just getting back into the playful aspect of the non-monogamy as well. Mm. I think there's been I've had such an amazing experience with my writing and unpacking, and that has taught me so much with my articles and just sitting and diving into myself. I can get really sort of caught up in what everything means and what's the purpose and what is this teaching me about myself and all of that. But then also really coming back to the playfulness and the lightness and coming back to the beginning, you know, why did we enter the non-monogamy, you know, to have fun and joy and compersion and pleasure. I think that's something that I've sort of been working through as well. Yeah.
I love that. I love that.
Would you say that's accurate witnessed?
Yeah, I would say that's a noble pursuit, you know, and it's great. Yeah. And it's something that is always being, renegotiated with yourself and our relationship, and it's just a reminder to always keep it light. I think that's great. But the thing that I would say, it's actually not non-monogamy specific, but it's probably my most honest answer. I think I come from a background in like the creative arts, And so the thing that I'm constantly trying to work on is this sense of perfectionism, and when it becomes destructive kind of perfectionism, where it kind of takes away from my enjoyment of different things. So that's something that I'm constantly just interrogating within myself, making sure that, you know, wanting to do the best that I can doesn't actually impair my ability to actually enjoy things. And that might come down to, you know, stuff with like the Evolving Love Project, or like if we're recording a podcast and there's a slight hum in the background and I'm just like, oh, my world is ended. You know, what would all my musician friends say about this? Like, I'm so embarrassed, you know, but it does have very real consequences on my life. And it's something that has always been a struggle. And I think that's my ongoing struggle, is just to give myself grace to still try as hard as I can in everything that I do, but to, you know, if I don't meet, you know, expectations, just to have some grace with myself.
Yeah. As we all could. I had a client who said the other day, don't let perfect get in the way of good. I think it's don't let great get in the way of good, right? But yeah, I totally resonate with that. People listening have enjoyed this conversation. You guys are doing an in-person retreat in Byron Bay, right? I've got the dates in front of me. It's coming up soon. Well, not soon. It's going to come up fast. But 24th to 26th of May, 3 days, 2 nights. And it's just with you, is it, Abby? Is it a woman's retreat?
Yeah, so that's a women's retreat that's happening in May 24th to the 26th in the beautiful Yass Valley at Heartspace Retreat.
It looks amazing. Oh my God, the space looks so cool.
It is so beautiful, and the chef there is amazing, and we're going to have another beautiful time. It's the second retreat that I'm hosting out there, and it's wonderful. It's shaping up to be a wonderful group of women. There are some women who are coming again. They came to the first one that I did in September, and they're coming back for this one as well. So,
they're coming from all over Australia, which is all exciting. Last time you had people flying in from Perth and flying in from Queensland, and it was a pretty amazing experience. But Abby runs that. That is just a women's retreat. So I just support from afar and go, yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, you're the cheerleader.
Yeah, all this amazing community building and all that kind of stuff is really fantastic.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I really value the female connections I've made within non-monogamy. There's something different about it. I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on it. We talked about this. We were just overseas in Jamaica on a lifestyle retreat, and we had this woman's gathering on one of the days. Same thing. We all were just talking about, you know, the challenges we've had in connecting with women and the fears or the intimidation or, you know, any preconceived notions around what a person's going to be like and how they're going to think about you. And it's just really nice to share that with people and to get fucking real and to just be super open. And there's, you know, we walk around with so many guards up and sometimes you can't break through that. And I feel like for some reason, people that are open to talking about non-monogamy are open to having conversations that are a little bit like that. And I really value that in my life. So, hey, you might fucking see me showing up to Byron Bay in May.
Oh, we would love that.
And then talk to me about your conversations.
Yeah, so we hold conversation evenings monthly in Canberra, and we also hold them in Sydney now as well. So we've been doing those. We're into our third year for the conversation evenings. So that's an amazing way to kind of meet other people within the community, and also just a really safe space to share if you would like to share. And people are not if they don't feel like sharing, that is totally cool as well. They can just come and listen if they're very experienced in non-monogamy, or if they're even, we have people who are monogamous coming along and just really interested in the conversation. So we hold those conversation evenings, and we're hoping to take them on tour, get up to Brisbane, down to Melbourne. There's a potential for a Newcastle conversation evening as well.
We've been trying to get to one of the Sydney ones for ages, so we're waiting for a date that works, but we've been planning it. We check every time and we're like, can we make this happen? So hopefully we'll see you for one, or we'll just force you to come to one in Newcastle.
Yeah, well, it seems that there's a lot of non-monogamous people in Newcastle, Kate. So,
well, do you guys have the experience, because you are public and open about it, that people that aren't public are like, hey, by the way, we're non-monogamous as well? And I'm like, what? How did I not know this? Do you guys have that happen?
Yeah, that does happen, actually. That does happen.
That's happened quite a few times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is always a funny situation.
Oh, amazing. Well, thank you guys. For people who want to get more information, the website is evolvinglovproject.com.com.au.com, I think.
.com. Yeah. Cool. And the Substack, which houses all the podcast and all of Abby's incredible writing, that's at evolvingloveproject.substack.com.
Amazing. And then your Instagram is Evolving Love Project as well, right? Are you on any other platforms?
Look, I mean, we're moderately on TikTok, but
venturing.
I don't know. That's Instagram is the best place to find Abby's stuff.
Yeah. Instagram cool. and Substack. Awesome.
Amazing. Yeah, please go and read what Abby writes. It's awesome. And I'm excited to get to one of you guys' conversation evenings. Thank you so much for hanging out. I really appreciate it. You guys are awesome.
Oh, thank you so much, Kate. I've loved this chat.
Yeah, same. Thank you so much, Kate.
Next time I'm going to try and lock you guys down again, and I'll get Greg in here this time. It's hard coordinating four people's schedules, but it's going to happen. Thank you so much, guys, and please enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll see you on the next one. Awesome.